Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksufis is daf Samach Dalet. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf as long as they're connected to the Shmuel. You recall that we are in the discussion of the Gemara of Mered. The Mishnah discusses the scenario in which a husband or a wife rebels against their spouse, and accordingly, the Chachamim said that that's obviously an intolerable situation. And so there are two basic ways in which it is dealt with. Well, actually, there's one basic way which is dealt with, and that's financial. You hit either one of them financially, whoever's responsible for the merida, and it's just now a question of what is going to be the rate of financial penalty. So in our mission, we saw that the rate is 70 dinarim per week. In other words, that for the woman who is rebelling against her husband, so you hit her at a rate of 70 dinarim per week. And as I mentioned yesterday, the philosophy behind the Mishnah is that it's a slow and steady incremental decrease of her ksuva to the point where hopefully at that point in time she'll have an attitude adjustment and she'll no longer be a morid. For the husband who is morid against his wife, so the rate is going to be 3 dinarim, an add-on to the ksuva of 3 dinarim per week. The discrepancy between the woman and the husband, so the Gemara later on will discuss exactly how to explain that discrepancy. And the second way that we saw yesterday was with a brice. The brice on Samach Gimel Amud Beis talked about the financial penalty, but the financial penalty of the brice is all in one shot. You give warning. You give warning to her privately. Then you announce and show publicly for 4 Shabbosim that she is a Moredes. And then at the end of those 4 weeks, then she is going to lose her entire ksuva. That is that's the brisa that we saw yesterday. Who does the halacha follow like? So the Amoraim are at odds with one another in terms of which path we're going to follow. What exactly do we mean when we say Mored? What kind of rebellion are we talking about? So the Gemara's conclusion yesterday is that everyone's in agreement that Moredes means Tashmish Amita, meaning that she or he is refusing, actively refusing, verbally refusing to be intimate with their spouse, and that's all. Everyone's in agreement that that's going to be the definition of a Moredes or Mored. What about Malacha as well? So that's subject to a Machlokas, and we saw that yesterday in the Gemara. Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanina included Malacha as well, meaning she refuses to do work for her husband, and again, her refusal is a verbal refusal. It's not just a passive one. So that, according to one Amara, also qualifies as a Moredes as well. And for the husband's standpoint, his version of that would be that he's not going to supply his wife with food. That's his that's Moreid. So that's the discussion we've been in the Gemara. We're going to continue with the discussion. Most of today's daf is going to be conclusion of that discussion. Samach Dal Amud Aleph and the top of Samach Dal Amud Beis is a conclusion of that discussion, and then we move on to discuss other basic obligations that a husband has to his wife. In the Gemara, we find ourselves in Samach Gimel Amud Beis. We are 2/3 of the way down in the Amud. Hechidami Moredes. Even more than that. Sorry. We're about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. The first words in the line is Einam Lachem Ba. Okay, Gemara continues. The Gemara says, Hechidami Moredes. Give me the exact parameter of what it means that she's a Moredes. So the Gemara says, Amara Meimar, the Amra Be'inalei, Umitza'aranalei. So literally the words means that she says she wants him, but she wants to torment him, she wants to make his life miserable. If you take a look at Rashi explains exactly what was that statement. So Hechidam Yomoredes. So Rashi writes, the Kofenosa, the Mashingita, Pochas and Ksuvasa. Right, when do we start chipping away to Ksuva? The Amra Be'inale, Shiesha Kofa Yide Pchisas Ksuvasa. Sorry, Rashi over here, I'm sorry. Rashi over here doesn't explain, but basically the way it's understood is that she says, I'd like to continue the marriage, but at the same time, we're not going to have relations. In other words, so she is bent on the idea that there's nothing wrong with him per se. It's just that for whatever reason, for whatever the explanation is, obviously your life is way too complicated for me to understand these things, but for whatever the reason, she says that she's going to refuse to have relations with her husband. Ava amra masalai lo kaifin alei. But the Gemara says as follows. But let's say she says masalai, meaning she makes an accusation that her husband is disgusting to her, meaning she's not doing it, she's not having relations because she's just there to torment her husband, but there's something repulsive about her husband. And he says masalai. So lo kaifin alei, so then we don't force her, meaning We don't go through this process of the Mishnah of chipping away at her ksuva until she has a change of attitude. If she says Mar Salai, so obviously that basically she's saying is that I'm not having relations because there's something repulsive to him. What then becomes the result if a woman says that? If you take a look at Rashi, so Rashi says Lo Kaifina Le La Shosa Ela Nosin La Get V'Yotze B'Lo Ksuva. So the So a get is given right away because it's irreconcilable differences that exist between him and her, and so the get's going to be given right away. But at the same time, however, she's not going to be receiving a ksuva. She's not going to be receiving a ksuva. So here, why not? In other words, she says that he's repulsive to me. So the difference in what Rashi means, most probably, although Rashi is very terse in his language, is that if she says Ma'asalai, but there's nothing to substantiate that claim of Ma'asalai, so in other words, she just simply can't exit the marriage without a without any type of explanation. In other words, if she just gives some sort of statement, verbal statement of Ma'asalai, so. Look, the marriage is intolerable. The marriage is just simply unacceptable. There is going to be termination of marriage. But if she does not give an objective explanation of why that should be, so then she's not going to be entitled to her ksuva. If she can give some sort of objective explanation, if she can validate and prove what exactly is ma'os, what exactly is disgusting to her about the man, so then obviously she will receive a ksuva.
At the beginning of the marriage, he wasn't disgusting?
Right, well, that's exactly the point. Meaning, correct, if she's making the statement, then there's nothing to substantiate that statement other than just her statement. So then, again, the marriage is going to get terminated because it's just an intolerable existence. Just not tenable that they are going to be husband and wife, but they're not going to have relations. But at the same time, because she's claiming Ma'asalai, there's nothing to substantiate it, and there's nothing, right, literally nothing has changed. So then, get but no ksuva. Correct. So Ava Amra Ma'asalai Lo Kaifin Alei Marzucha Amai Kaifin Alei. Marzucha says even such a scenario, no, we're gonna try to keep them together. And again, Kaifin Alei, what does that mean? Kaifin Alei, it literally means force her, you force him, force her. But it basically means we're gonna go through the process of our Mishnah, chip away at the ksuva 70 dinarim a week until she goes through some sort of attitude adjustment. So Hava Ovda Ba'achva Marzucha V'Nafak Mine Rabbi Chanina Mesurah. And the Gemara then quotes an anecdotal story where seems like a great idea, meaning there was an incident where a woman said that she's not having relations with her husband. Her claim was Ma'asalai, he's disgusting to me. And the Chachamim said, you know what, let's work it out together, meaning let's see if we can work it out. Now when I say work it out, by the way, don't get confused, we're not talking counseling, we're talking about chipping away at her ksuva at a rate of 70 dinarim a week. But basically, in other words, again, the slow and steady approach of the Mishnah and not have an immediate divorce. V'achve Marzucha, and Marzucha was the one who was presiding over the Beis Din, and he said let's do this slowly. And in fact, they reconciled. And in fact, v'nafik mine Rabbi Chanina Misura. And not only that, but they had Rabbi Chanina. So all's well that ends well. Great story, great ending. Velohi. But then the Gemara points out that meaning okay, good. That's anecdotal evidence. That's wonderful. But that's not going to sway us one way or another. Hasam siyata dishmaya hava. They had divine assistance. In other words, that's very unusual. Akash Baruch Hu really intervened in that marriage. But generally speaking, when a woman says Ma'asalai, so at that point in time you don't go through the process of her Mishnah of trying to get her to change her viewpoint.
Question: payment, the 7 a month or whatever.
A week.
A week, is that a relative amount if he only has earnings of 14?
No. Again, the money we're talking about over here is not. It's from the ksuva. It's either a deduction for her from the ksuva, or it's in addition to the ksuva. No money is actually being taken away. In other words, she's entitled to a ksuva of 200 zuz. Correct. It's bookkeeping. So no money's actually physically being taken away. It's just that we're going to be deducting from the ksuva to the point where the ksuva is at zero. Once the ksuva is at zero, so then the get will be given. Kalta de Rav Zvid Imridam, the daughter-in-law of Rav Zvid, so rebelled. So Havatvisa Chadshira, and what did she do? She was toe-faced. She took one of the articles of clothing. Now, what's going on over here? If you take a look at Rashi again, Rashi is unbelievably terse in these Gemaras. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes, Mi'olecha shechnisola b'ksuva. Okay, so there's a coat that went into the ksuva. What does that mean, a coat went into the ksuva? Like we've discussed already a number of times, but let's review. A woman gets married. When she gets married, there are certain articles of property that are written into the ksuva, meaning the values of those articles. So that's what's called nechsei tzon barzel. Nechsei tzon barzel means that once these articles are into the ksuva, so she is going to be at the termination of the marriage entitled to all those, to the value of those articles. Okay, that's what's called nechsei tzon barzel. And the issue over here is as follows. She was a moredet. She rebelled. And she said, Marsalai. And she said, no, this is no good. You're right, he's disgusting to me. What do we learn? That if it's an unsubstantiated claim of Marsalai, so the marriage ends immediately. Again, we just saw that was a machlokas. But the Gemara's conclusion seems to be that the marriage ends immediately. And sure, there's a forfeiture of Iksuva. Again, it's an unsubstantiated claim of Marsalai, so that's a forfeiture of Iksuva. When she forfeits Iksuva, so not only does she forfeit her base value of 200 zuz that she's entitled to, but she's also going to be forfeiting the nechsei tzon barzel that's written into the ksuva as well. I mean, a forfeiture of the ksuva is a forfeiture of all the value of the ksuva, including the nechsei tzon barzel. So what does she do? So she takes a article of clothing. Okay, so in other words, she feels that, I know there's a forfeiture of ksuva, but that's mine. And so she takes it. So Yosef, So to which the Gemara says, well, she's a morena, she's the woman's rebelling, and she is mafsid, she loses her clothing, which are baloseh kayamin, her extant clothing, her clothing that's still around. So in other words, again, we're talking about the clothing that's written into the ksuva. So she is a moreta, she forfeits her ksuva, including that as well. So Amalu Rav Gamda Mishum Rav Zvid Gavaraba. I'm sorry. So the Gemara right now is issuing as its first ruling she's not entitled to that. Meaning because that was part of the ksuva, because that was written into the ksuva, and because she forfeits her ksuva, so she's not entitled to that. That right now is the Gemara's ruling. So Amalu Rav Gamda Mishum de Rav Zvid Gava Rabba Machna Fisulei. So Rav Gamda says, you know, you're passing like Rav Zvid, but you know, I'm going to make the following accusation about you. You're passing like Rav Zvid because he's a great man, he's a Gava Rabba, and you want to honor him. So therefore you're passing like him. But that's not really the halacha. V'am Rav Kanami by Rava. In fact, Rava asks this very question. When a wife is a moredis and she does forfeit her ksuva, so is she also going to lose her nechsei tzon barzel? Rava asked the question. Rava didn't know the answer to the question. Rava was unsure. So how can you just simply go like Rav Zvid and say that she's going to lose her tzon barzel when meanwhile you know that Rava asked this question, Rava didn't answer the question? That is one version of how this incident went. Ikid Amri, the Gemara has a slightly different version of how this incident went. Yasav Akamri, Mardalo Yisiyah, so again, she was a moredis, she rebelled, she is going to forfeit her ksuva, she takes a article of clothing that was written into the ksuva, and in the second version, the ruling was she gets to keep it. Okay, that was the ruling. So Amalu Rav Gamda, says, now wait a second. Mishum de Rav Zvid Gavarabahu, Avchisu Le Ledina Ilave. You know, Rav Zvid's a great man. And and this Gemara is great. You know what the definition of great means? Great means he doesn't care. Meaning that he's so confident, he's so self-assured about himself. He has no he doesn't get contrite. He doesn't get he's not small. And you know that if you paskin against him, he's just going to shrug his shoulders. Okay, he paskin against me. Fine. So you know that's how Rav Zvid's going to handle himself. And so therefore you paskin against him. And she's not entitled to it. So Gavarabahu Afchisu Leladina. You literally turned over the halacha because you know that Rav Zvid really won't react. So Hamar of Kahanami bye Le Rava Velo Pashi. And once again we go back to Rava. Rava was asked a question. The wife is a morandist, and the Nechsei Tzon Barzel that was written into the ksuva, is she entitled to it or is she not? In other words, she forfeits her base value of 200 zuz. That's a given. But does she also forfeit her Nechsei on Barzal? Rava says, I don't know. Now, we'll get to it in just a moment, by the way. If you're Rava, what do you do? We'll get to that in just a second. But right now, we know that that's what Rava says. Rava says, I don't know. So, v'lo pashit, hasha delo, I'm sorry, period. So once again, the question goes back to Rav Gamda. Rav Gamda, how can you go against the ruling of Rava? The ruling of Rava is, we don't know what happens to the Nechzei Tzoron Barzal. That's the ruling of Rava. Good. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the two versions of the story. So once again, the question on the table is the wife's a Moredis. She forfeits the Ksuva. Does she also forfeit the Nechzei Tzoron Barzal? Version number one. Both versions have Rava saying, I don't know, which we're going to just see, we'll see in a moment. And according to version one, she does forfeit the Nechzei Tzoron Barzal as well. According to version number two, she does not forfeit her Nechzei Tzoron Barzal. The Gemara says, what do we do after all said and done? We're on the top of Samach Dalam and Aleph. So now, what do we say? We say we don't know. Meaning, we have two different versions, and on top of all that, we also have Rava. Rava says, I don't know what to do. So, tough salam afkinamina. So, where does money belong when we don't know where it belongs? Okay, I know it's a funny sentence, but that's basically what the Gemara is asking. Where does money belong where we don't know where it belongs? The answer is ownership and possession. Or I should say rather, just to keep it simple. Possession. Possession is really going to be the determining factor. So that means if the man's holding on to it, it belongs to the man. If the woman's holding on to it, it belongs to the woman. This is a halacha of what's known as tfisa. Tfisa means that if she grabs it, and again, we don't have certainty of where it belonged to begin with, so she now becomes the owner of that item. So lo tafsi olavin alei, but however, she wasn't toe-faced, and it was in the man's possession, so it belongs to the man. Period. So in other words, really, ownership is going to be the determinant, and if she grabs, it's hers. If she doesn't grab, it belongs to him. Okay. Agita. And then the Gemara says, and it's just not exactly clear what the Gemara right now was commenting on, the Gemara says, let's wait 12 months before a get is actually issued. And in that 12-month interim, so she does not get mazonos from the husband. Meaning, it's not perfectly clear what the Gemara is going on. Look, a woman's rebelling, so she's going to lose her ksuva. Now, once again, there are two basic approaches in terms of how she's going to lose her ksuva. Slow and steady like our Mishnah, or after a four-week period, she'll lose the entirety of her ksuva, like the brisa that we mentioned earlier. Still, after all is said and done, what happens after her ksuva goes down to zero? So, like we said already a number of times, so when a ksuva goes down to zero, so that's it. In other words, there's no longer a ksuva, so the manager simply issues again, and that's it. What the Gemara now is suggesting is that there should be a 12-month waiting period. In other words, she's a moredis, and there's going to be a divorce, but let's see if we can avoid it. We'll see throughout the Gemara. In other words, in Ksuvas and in Gittin as well, if a divorce can be avoided, so let's try our best to avoid the divorce. So the Gemara over here is suggesting that there should be a 12-month waiting period before the get is actually issued. Not that he's going to support her during those 12 months, because, again, right now the Ksuvas at zero, and she's a moredis, and from the husband's perspective, okay, like in other words, She's not changing her position. She's rebelling. So okay, so he's not going to have to support her during those 12 months. But hopefully the hope is that during those 12 months there'll be some sort of reconsideration and reconciliation. Amar Tuvi Bar Kisa, Amar Shmo Kosa Nigeres Merit Al Arusa, Vein Kosa Nigeres Merit Al Shemeres Yavam. Okay. For now, the rest of this Amud, until the bottom of this Amud, you see the two dots towards the bottom? So we're going to try to work out a statement that was made in the name of Shmuel. You write an Igeris Merit, a letter of rebellion, for the Arusa, but you do not write a letter of rebellion for Shemeres Yavam. Meaning that, like we've been discussing now for the past couple of days, well, actually just yesterday and today. Okay, so I mean that literally. So like we've been discussing, when a woman is a moredis, when she rebels, so once again, there's going to be a deduction from a ksuva. Two different ways of how that's going to get deducted, but a ksuva is going to get deducted. And what happens at the conclusion of that? So you write for the man a letter. Letter meaning a legal document stating she's a moredis, and therefore she's not entitled to ksuva. Meaning because she has her paperwork, meaning she has a ksuva that's going to entitle her to the money. So what is he going to have when they go to court? So what he's going to have is he's going to have a igeres merit. He's going to have a letter stating that she was a moredis, and he's waited the requisite amount of time, and now when they go to court, so they're going to have offsetting documents. But you have to write in the document, otherwise what's going to protect him from when she comes with the ksuva saying, okay, he owes me this money. Okay, so you write it. What Shmuel says, that part's fine. That part's easy. What Shmuel says is that you write it for the Arusa, but you don't write it for the Shomeres Yavam. And Arusa can be a Moredish. She can rebel. Remember, the answer is unequivocally yes. We said that yesterday. And Arusa can rebel. Now, the Arusa and the Arusa are not having relations. What is she doing? It's very simple. What she's doing is that she's tormenting her husband. She's saying, look, I know we're not having relations now. We're only at the first stage of marriage. But I'm telling you this. I'll tell you that, lo be'ina. In other words, she's saying unequivocally, we're not going to have relations. That's also moredus, even though they're not having relations anyway. But like the Gemara said yesterday, eino doma mishi eish lo pas b'salo le mishi eino pas b'salo. Yeah, but once she says that they're not going to have relations when they do get married, so he loses his literally his bread in the basket, meaning it's now psychologically discomforting for him to be in this situation, and she's a moredus. So fine. So that part's clear. What Shmuel's saying, however, which needs clarification, is that second statement of Shmuel, which is, you'll write it if for a man whose Arusa is rebelling, but you're not going to write it for a man whose Shomer's Yavam is rebelling. To which the Gemara says, wait a second, what's the difference? Meisvei. Gemara challenges based on a Braisa that we saw yesterday. The Braisa said, when you have a wife, and it doesn't matter what degree a wife she is, she could be an Arusa, she could be a Nesua, she could be a Chola, a Nida, or even a Shomer Yavam. Shomer Yavam is your wife? Not yes. Right, not absolute, meaning you didn't do the mitzvah of Yibam yet, but you know that if you're the Yavam and she's the Yavama, so you know you have a destiny together. So you have to do the mitzvah of Yibam, but you're pretty close to being married. If she states at that point in time, look, we'll get married and that'll all be well and good, but she's a Moredis, she makes a declaration, like we saw in the beginning of the daf today. She makes a declaration that we're not gonna be with each other. She's a Moredis and the Braisa says she has the status of Moredis and you treat her accordingly. So the question is very simple. What's Shmuel talking about? Shmuel says, We'll write the Igeres Merit for the Arusa, but not for the Shomeres Yavam. What's he talking about? Gemara is going to make attempts to answer this question. Here we go now. This is called attempt number one. Lo kasha kanshitava hu kanshitava hi. So the Gemara says, well, it depends who is initiating. Where he is initiating and she's being the moredis, or she's initiating and he's being the mored. So the Amar of Tachliva bar Avim Amar Shmuel Tavahu niskakin lo, Tavahi ain't niskakin lo. So the Gemara says that if he's Toveah, if he's initiating and she's refusing, so niskakenlo, so we deal with it, meaning we respond. But tavahi, but if she is initiating, so ain niskakenlo, so then we don't. So the Gemara says, "B'mai kim to lahad d'shmo b'shetavahi." So the Gemara says, "Now wait a second, let's think this through. We're now describing a scenario in which she is she's the one who's propositioning him, and he's the one that's refusing. Hai kosher negeres merit al arusa." So the Gemara says, "Now wait a second, I'm not fully understanding. When the Shmuel made the statement of you write the igeres merit al arusa, now al arusa means what? Meaning that she's the object of the merida. Meaning it's because of her that we're writing the igeres merit. But if what you're describing is where she's the one who's propositioning, now when I say propositioning, keep in mind they're not living together right now as husband and wife. And it's an arusa and arusa. And she's the one saying, okay, I hope this will be a successful marriage. And he's the one right now who's saying, no. Meaning, he's right now at this point claiming that they're not going to have relations. So the Gemara says, li arusa mi baile. If she's the one if he's rebelling and she's the one who is, being scorned against, so we should be writing the letter of Merida li arusa, not al arusa. So alokashe tini la arusa. The Gemara says, okay, really. So the only issue is the preposition. So we'll change the preposition. Instead of al, we'll write li. So maishna le alokash. I'm sorry, maishna shemaras yavan delo. So the Gemara says, now once again, let's think this through. Okay, so the text of the Braisa has been changed, and fine. So now, let's think this through now. If a woman who's an Arusa says, my husband is refusing, so we write a Igeres Mered. In other words, he's a rebellier, and we'll write her a letter accordingly. If the Shomeres Yavam, which now the way we understand it means that Shomeres Yavam is saying, right, I'd like the marriage to be a healthy marriage, and he's saying, no, it's not going to be a healthy marriage, so we don't write it. So now the Gemara says, okay, now that we're here, let's ask a simple question. What's the difference? So
there's no
yibo.
So without Bia, there's no
yibo. Yeah, but in other words, I guess what he's saying is that I'll go through the mitzvah of yibo, but that'll be it. That something along those lines. Okay, fair point. So Maishna Shemeres Yavam Delo, Darmin Allah Zil Lo Mifkarata Arusanami Name Allah Zil Lo Mifkarata. So the Gemara says, look, by the Shemeres Yavam, well, maybe the reason why we're not going to be writing a letter of Merida is because the Shemeres Yavam says, look, I have the mitzvah Peruvu. You don't have the mitzvah Peruvu, so maybe that could be a very basic distinction between him and her. To which the Gemara says, same thing is true by Arusa, meaning he has the mitzvah Peruvu, she does not have the mitzvah Peruvu. Remember what we did back in Yavamos. The mitzvah Peruvu is only for the man, not for the woman. Now, granted, as we already pointed out in Yavamos, it's going to be slightly difficult, slightly challenging to do the mitzvah Peruvu without her, admittedly. But still, the mitzvah is on him, not on her. So, but the Gemara says, but obviously that can't be the difference between the two. So the Amra beina chutzli ado amar lekvura. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, hachana mishemers yavam bava machmas taina bava machmas taina. The Gemara says, look, you're right. The woman does not have a mitzvah peruvu, but you know what she would love? She would love children. Any woman would love children, aside from the emotional bond that she has with her children, but more than that, just practically speaking, right? I get older. Who's going to take care of me in my old age? She turns to her husband. You? You're going to take care of me in my old age, please. In other words, I need children. I need children who are going to help me walk from place to place. I need children who are going to bury me. In other words, I don't have a mitzvah peruvu per se, but I do have needs later in life. And so with just a little bit of planning, those needs will be taken care of. And by a little bit of planning, I mean, she'll have children. So, Ela Idividi Shetavahu Velo Kasha. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're gonna stop this line of thinking, meaning that was our first approach. It doesn't really work out. She can also demand children, even though she doesn't have a mitzvah peruvu. So once again, we're back to square one. Square one is that Shmuel makes a statement that you write an Igeres Mered for the Arusa, but you don't write it for the not for. Okay, we're going all the way back to the beginning. You're writing an Igeres Mered about an Arusa, but you're not going to write an Igeres Mered about a Shemeres Yavam. Okay, and in both cases, once again, we're back to square one, right? He's the one who is propositioning; she's the one who's refusing. And again, refusal right now doesn't mean that they're living together, because they're not. It means that she's predicting in the future nothing's going to happen between you and I. This will be a marriage of convenience, but we're not going to be together as husband and wife. Okay, in both cases. And once again, now that we're back at square one, what's the difference between the two cases? V'lokasha kan lachlo tzikan liyabeim. So the Gemara says, well, it depends on what exactly the course of plan is. Are we going to go through Chalitza? Are we going to go through Yibam? Damar Pedas, Amar Rav Yochanan, Tavalach, Lotz, Niskakan Lo. Let's say his demand is that we're going to do Chalitza. You listen to him. But Tavali Avim, but if his demand is that we're going to do Yibam, Ein Niskakan Lo, so then we don't listen to him. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? So the Gemara says, look, when he's demanding Yibam, and she's saying, no, I'm not interested in Yibam. So we say to the man, look, wait, nobody likes rejection. Everyone hates rejection. But when all said and done, you can go on with your life. Meaning you're a man. So you want to marry another woman, so go ahead and marry another woman. So her no to you, right now, she's a Shemeres Yavam. She wants to remain a Shemeres Yavam, that's fine. We're not gonna start penalizing her at this point in time. Meaning she doesn't want to go any further. Good. So why don't you just leave it alone? So the Gemara says, "Lachlotz nami name le zilvanas divistar chrisa." But the Gemara says, "But if that's true, so then let's say the course of action is chalitza. He's demanding chalitza, and she's saying no. Once again, we turn to the man. We say, look." That's even a worse rejection, right? He wants to do chalitza, and she's saying, "No, I don't want to do chalitza." So she's rejecting to reject him. if you can imagine. But still, the Gemara says, okay, we once again, we turn to the man. We say to the man, look, okay, I understand. She's right now, she's not being that particularly helpful, but you can go on with your life. You can marry another woman. Elo da amar kevin da agidu bi lo kayav le achrisa. Achanami kevin da agidu bi lo kayav le achrisa. So the man can turn around and say, look, it's not as simple as you just suggested. Meaning, right now, I have a shemaris yavam. Yibum chalitza, whatever course of action is, I have a shemaris yavam. So now let's say I go out and I go on the dating circuit and I sit down now at dinner with a potential new wife, and I got to make full disclosure. Look, here's how much money I make, and here's how many kids we plan on having, and oh by the way. There is a Shomer's Yavam, and I know that could be a little bit tricky, but right now she's refusing Yibum, she's refusing Chalitza, but it'll work itself out. Okay, and understandably, she's going to end that evening by saying, look, it seemed like a really nice guy, but that Shomer's Yavam, that's not a small detail. So Ella, so once again, back to the drawing board. So in both cases, we're talking about a scenario where there's a tfiyah for yibum. In other words, he's propositioning that to ishamers yavam, let's do yibum. And there really is no discrepancy. Meaning, once again, the discrepancy we're looking at is the Braisa says that you write an igeris merit for ishamers yavam. Shmuel says you do not. Okay, that's called a stira. So the Gemara says, we'll resolve the stira, and this will be our final answer, and this will be the final approach of the Gemara. We'll resolve the stira by talking about Mishnah Rishona, Mishnah Achrona. We just used this kind of language a couple days ago in the Mishnah. Mishnah Rishona, Mishnah Achrona just simply means there was an original approach, and then there was a new way to look at it. The original approach was Mitzvah Yibum Kodem, Mitzvah Chalitza. Given the choice, if in other words, you have a Yavama, she's a Shomer's Yavam, and given the choice, you should do the mitzvah of Yibum. You want to perpetuate the name of your brother, so you do the mitzvah of Yibum. Chalitza is only a second place, a distant second place to that of Yibum. Yibum is better. That's Barishana, Shayu Miskavim, L'shem Mitzvah. But that was originally when people had in mind to do the mitzvah. In other words, they married her for the purpose of the mitzvah. However, nowadays where people do not have intention to do the mitzvah of Yibum, so therefore it's better to do the mitzvah of Chalitza rather than to do the mitzvah of Yibum. That's Mishnah Achrona. So, when she's refusing, so bizman mishnah rishona, so we say to the man, look, there's a mitzvah to do the mitzvah of Yibum, and you have a right and a mitzvah to do so. She's refusing, we're going to write an igeris merit. By the time Mishnah Achrona rolled around, Mishnah Achrona said, you know what? We're not going to promote the mitzvah of Yibum. We actually are going to promote Chalitza over Yibum. And once we get to the point of Mishnah Achrona, she's rebelling, so the Chachamim will say, the Basin will say, good. Meaning, we really don't want the mitzvah of Yibum. So she's telling you that she doesn't want the mitzvah of Yibum? We agree. For different reasons, right? She's got over her, she's got her personal reasons. But we think that fundamentally, the mitzvah of Chalitza should be done before the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, Adkan. Takes us to the end of the sugya, and that resolves the discrepancy between Shmuel and the Braisa. The Braisa says that you write Nigeres Mered for all wives, even quasi-wives, even an Arusa, even a Shomeres Yavam. Shmuel says you do not write Nigeres Mered for a Shomeres Yavam. And the simple way to conclude this discussion is, because that's the Gemara's conclusion, is that Shmuel was talking Bizman Mishnah Achrona, where we do not promote Yibum, and because we don't promote Yibum, so therefore, if she's refusing, Beis Din will say, good. We like that. I mean, not for the same reasons, but we like that. Okay, Adkan, that takes us now to the next Gemara. Ad Masayu Poches. You remember our Mishnah's approach to the Mered is by deduction. How much do we deduct from her? So 70 dinarim a week. But if you remember back in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says no, not 70 dinarim, but rather 7 tarpi ikin. So, it's a term that describes some sort of currency. What does that mean? My tarpeikin amar of sheshes astira. It's the reference to the astira. One of those gemaras where the gemara tried to help, but what kind of help are we talking about? We translated it from one unknown currency to another unknown currency. The kama astira, the gemara is recognizing that. Pagad azuz, so we're talking about a half of a zuz. Half a zuz and a dinar are equivalent to one another. Okay, you ran in the daf long enough, you'll get comfortable with this terminology. So we're talking now about a half of a zuz, The Gemara quotes a braisa as well. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shlosh Tarpikin, Shein Tisha, Mine v'chatzil chol yom, a ma'a v'chetzi for every day. A ma'a v'chetzi for every day, ma'a v'chetzi for every day, 6 days a week. Now I know there's seven, I'll get to that in just a moment. 6 days a week, so it comes out to a total of 9 for the week. Good. So that's, in other words, but suffice to say, it is half the amount that the Tanna Kamma is going to deduct. The Tanna Kamma is going to deduct a full dinar a week, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no, a half a dinar per day, 6 days a week, comes out to nine half Zuzim or half dinarim a week. So Amalei Rabbi Chaya Yosef Lishmua Maishna Ihu Diavinale de Shabbos Maishna Ihi de Lo Yavinale de Shabbos. Gemara asks a really simple question. Look, when it comes to her and her Merida, and there's going to be a deduction, so we're deducting seven. For every day of the week, we're deducting one dinar. So for every day of the week that she is Marej, we deduct one dinar, comes out to seven a week. Good. When it comes to him and his rebellion, so how many are we going to add onto the ksuva? So again, if you're the Tanna Kamma, you're adding three a week, half per day. And if you are Rabbi Huda, you're adding to the ksuva a half a dinar a day. Again, a half a dinar a day, 6 days a week. And that's going to equal nine half dinarim, or what the Mishnah referred to as tarpi'ikin. Question is very simple. Why, for the woman, when we deduct from her, we'll get to the more obvious question, which is, why the discrepancy in value? That the Gemara is going to ask momentarily. But right now, we're just wondering, why, when she rebels, do we deduct seven dinarim, one per day, and when he rebels, we're not counting Shabbos? Gemara gives a very interesting answer. So, So ihi de mivchas kapachis lamechzei kischar Shabbos. Because think about what we're doing. When it comes to her and her rebellion, what are we doing? We're deducting from Miksuva. We're deducting from Miksuva, so we're going to be deducting for Shabbos as well. In other words, that's considered a loss, not a profit. Loss is does not a violation of Schar Shabbos. Everyone remember Schar Shabbos? Schar Shabbos is the idea that you can't work on Shabbos. Now, don't tell any rabbi this who is running a shul. They work on Shabbos. Okay, I know you shouldn't say that, but they work on Shabbos. And not only that, but they get paid for the work they do on Shabbos. But as we all know, that's fine. That's legitimate. How is that fine? How is that legitimate? So we employ a concept called Havlah. Meaning Havlah means that they're really contracted to work all the time. Shabbos is included in that contract. But what you can't do, however, is you can't take a job specifically, exclusively for Shabbos and get paid for that. Okay, you can ask me about Chazanim. I tell you what, it's a legitimate question, but you know, you ask me another time. Don't ask me now. That's the halacha. It's an Issa D'Rabban, it's not an Issa D'Raisa, meaning, oddly enough, you keep Malacha is an Issa D'Raisa, Schar Shabbos. Working, right? When I say working, I mean doing some sort of service, which is not a violation of Shabbos. Like serving as a chazan, like babysitting, like whatever. In other words, any type of service performance, if you do it on Shabbos, you cannot get paid for that which you do on Shabbos. That's a rabbinic prohibition. It's called Schar Shabbos. So, if we're deducting from our ksuva, that's not Schar Shabbos. It's just the opposite. You're deducting from Riksuva. But however, but for him, in other words, when he's rebelling, so we're adding to the ksuva, so that means that she's profiting. She can't profit for the Shabbos, so therefore, mechzei kitzchar Shabbos, and that's why it looks like tzchar Shabbos if we were adding. So that's why for her, we are going to, if she's Moreid, we deduct every day from the ksuva, including Shabbos. If he's Moreid, we only deduct 6 days a week, not 7 days a week.
So either way, she loses.
No. What? What do you? No. That statement is not correct.
You're taking from her, but you're not giving her.
No, you are giving her, just not for Shabbos.
Giving her 6 days a week.
You're just giving her 6 days a week instead of seven. Okay. The yeah.
Why you got to predict? Why don't you just see the whole thing?
Huh? No, again, that... No. Anita has nothing to do with this. This has to do with the fact that she is stating that she's not going to be with her husband. That's no, we're talking about where she's rebelling. Okay, the Mishnah... Sorry. Take a look at the top Tosfos. They're not going to go through it right now. But Tosfos says, why can't you view this as Havla? Meaning, Havla, if you don't look at just the specific of the day, but you look at the totality of the week. So just like we explained earlier, that if you're looking at the totality of the week and you contracted for the week, so it's not an Isser of Schar Shabbos, so why not to say the same thing over here? So take a look at Tosfos. Basically, Tosfos says that it's per diem. In other words, that either the deduction or the addition is going to be per diem. So for her, deduction every day. For him, if he's rebelling, in addition, only 6 days a week. Okay. Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, I'm sorry. Amalei Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef v'shmol ma bein morid l'morades. Okay, now the Gemara finally deals with the basic question, and that is, what is the discrepancy in terms of the amounts? Right, she's rebelling, so she gets a deduction from Ksuva of 7 dinarim. Go with the Tanakama. 7 dinarim a week, and if he rebels, so it's going to be an addition to the Ksuva of 3 dinarim. So I'm relate say olamah mishuk shalzonos misocher and me. So the Gemara says very indelicately, but okay, the Gemara says things indelicately sometimes. Gemara basically says, look, we're talking about not having relations. It hurts. It hurts both partners in the marriage, but it hurts the man more than it hurts the woman. So in terms of the pain suffered from the abstinence, by the forced abstinence, so it hurts the man more than it hurts the woman. So therefore, her penalty is going to be larger than his penalty. That's one way the Gemara says it. Dava acher ze yitzru mechutz ze yitzru mebifnim. Also, the Gemara says it's more embarrassing to the husband than it is to the wife. So take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside, but you can take a look at Rashi, and Rashi will explain that it's more embarrassing to the husband when there's abstinence in the marriage, forced abstinence in the marriage, and so therefore he's already suffering an embarrassment. So in terms of the embarrassment that he suffers, so therefore her penalty is going to be greater than his penalty. Fine. That's the, but basically, one of two things. It either hurts him more than it hurts her, or it's more embarrassing to him more than it is to her. Gemara explains, that's how I explain the discrepancy between them. Okay, Adkan. We take ourselves now up to the new Mishnah. We're on Samach Dalam and Beis. We're starting the new Mishnah. And now we know that a husband has an obligation to feed his wife. One of the basic obligations that a husband has to his wife is to support her, meaning feed her. And it's one of the mitzvot HaTorah. Right, one of the three mitzvot HaTorah that the husband has an obligation to his wife. And so the Mishnah now turns its attention to this obligation the husband has to feed her. Now let's say the husband goes away on a long business trip. Okay? So what does the husband have to do? So there has to be a custodian set up that's going to manage his estate and take from the estate in order to give to his wife. Hamashra is ishto al yedei shlish. So if a man is feeding his wife through a mediator over here, maybe not the best way to describe it, but right now he's not, he and her are not together for whatever reason. Okay, it could be bad, it could be good. That's not important right now. That's not the point. The point right now that the Mishnah is making is going to be a really simple point, and that is, how much food is she entitled to? Now, as the Mishnah later on will point out, if he's a wealthy person and he's living, and he lives a wealthy lifestyle and he's eating very well, she eats whatever he's eating. Right? That'll be clear. That's unequivocal. The Mishnah is going to say that later on. Right now, we're talking about where he's away. What is considered the basic food requirement that she needs in order for her to subsist? I know the Mishnah is very technical, but good. That's what we learn when we do ksuvas together. We're in the very technical issues of how much food is she entitled to. So the Mishnah over here is going to be very specific. So hamash reshisto ayde shlish lo yifchos lo mishtei kav nechitim. So she's going to get 2 kavs of wheat every week. And mi arba kavin sorin. Or if instead of wheat she gets barley, so it's going to be 4 kavin of barley. Okay, wheat's more filling, I guess. I'm Rav Yossi, lo pasuk lo sar ne'ela Rabbi Yishmael Shaya, samach le'adom. Generally speaking, the contracted agreement does not include barley except for Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael happens to be close to Edom, and I guess a lot of barley is manufactured over there. V'nosi la chatzi kav kitnis. And the mission over here is going to be unbelievably specific. And a half a kav of lentil. V'chatzi log shem and a half a log of oil. V'kav grogris and a full kav of fig, meaning she needs fruit as part of the diet. Omanet vela, or pressed fig. V'imein lo posek l'umasan peros mimakam acher. Or if that's unavailable, some sort of fruit equivalent. V'nosin l'mita mapas amachatzelas. And also, she needs a bed to lie down on. And if her bed is worn out or she doesn't have a bed, that's also going to be part of the trustee's responsibility to provide her a bed. That also falls under the category of mizonos. Remember, some time ago, we also pointed out her medical bills also falls under the category of mizonos as well. So, also something to put on her head. New shoes every yantiv, meaning the clothing lasts for a long time. But the shoes wear out, so she's going to need shoes for every yantiv. So v'kelam shel chamishim zuz mishan l'shana, and also in terms of a budget for her clothing, so 50 zuz from 1 year to the next year, so annually 50 zuz for her clothing. V'ein nosin la lo chadashim b'yimosek chama v'lo shechakim b'yimosek shamim, and also make sure that it's appropriate to the season, meaning that the clothing has to be season appropriate. Ela nosin la kelim shel chamishim zuz b'yimosek shamim v'hi miskaseh b'vosim b'yimosek chama. She needs the heavier clothing in the winter. Winter is colder months. The rainy season is the colder months. So she's going to have the heavier clothing in the winter months. And then by the summer, the clothing will be worn out. But so what? The summer, it's going to be hotter outside. She doesn't need that heavy clothing. So it's going to be worn out. But okay, that's for the summer, that's perfect. Vashchakim shalom. And in terms of when the clothing finally do wear away, so who's entitled to the shmatas at the end? That's hers. Shmatas belong to her. And also a little bit of spending money. We talked about the spending money earlier. Now they have to eat together once a week. Now what I gave you in terms of the Mishnah is a simple interpretation of the Mishnah, where Achelos means they eat together. Stay tuned. We're going to, later on, the Gemara is going to give a possible different explanation of what that means. Now what if he doesn't give her that spending allowance? Masiyadeha shela. So she gets to keep her earnings. Right? We had this discussion earlier in the Gemara. It sounds like from our Mishnah that the earnings correspond to the... that her earnings are given to her husband in exchange for the spending money that she receives. Now, in terms of productivity, when she earns, what does she have to produce? Meaning there's expectation of what she needs to produce. So, 5 salaim, that's a weight of shesi, that's the vertical of the loom. In Yehuda, which is equivalent to 10 salaim in the galo. Oh, Mishkal Esr Salim Erev B'Yehuda Shein Esr Salim B'Galo, or it's going to be the weight of 10 Salim of Erev, that's the horizontal of the loom, which is equivalent to 20 Salim in the Galo. V'imaisa Menika Puchasin La Mimaisa Yada. If she is nursing, that nursing is just going to be time consuming, so the expectation is that she's not going to have to create that kind of productivity a week. And also, if she's nursing, she's going to need more caloric intake, so she gets more food. Now, this is the base minimum, what we just described. But if the man lives well, and he eats well, and he dresses well, so his wife's got to dress accordingly. So in other words, she's going to be living commensurate to what he's living. Money masisin la Rav Yochan bebroka v'la Rabbi Shimon. Okay, let's just quickly work our way through the next bit of Gemara, and that is the amount of food that she gets per week. And we're only going to be focusing on the wheat and the bread. What did our Mishnah say? 2 kavim a week. Gemara says, who does that agree with? Seemingly, nobody. How much is 2 meals for everybody? This is a Mishnah in Erev, and this is talking about the mitzvah of Erev Tchum. When you want to go beyond your boundary of Shabbos, so what you're going to do is you're going to lay down an Erev Tchum, within 2,000 amas of where you are, 2,000 amas of the city limit, that'll become your new makam shvisa, that will become your new point of center, and from there you can walk another 2,000 amas. Okay, and I just gave you my Erevin in a nutshell, not even a nutshell. And it's but the halacha, all we need to know right now is that's two meals. How much is that? Mizrach lechov lo l'shabbos de Rameir. Rameir says a weekday meal. Rabbi Yehuda omer l'shabbos v'lo l'chol. Rabbi Yehuda says a Shabbos meal. V'zevizim is kavim l'hakel. Now, truth of the matter is they're both interested in being lenient. Meaning it's not an objective amount. It's just basically what you eat during the week or what you eat on Shabbos. They disagree in terms of what smaller amount of bread. Do you eat less bread during the week or on Shabbos? Now, I know nowadays it's, you know, bread is basically on Shabbos now. But back then, they had bread every day. Bread was a staple food. And some had more bread during the week. Why? Because even though on Shabbos you have the mitzvah of eating three meals, but included in that meal is a lot of other food. And so they argue about whether or not you eat more bread during the week or on Shabbos. But that's not our focus. Our focus is going to be on the next opinions. Rav Yochanan ben Broka omer kikar lokech bepundayon me'arba asayin l'stela. Rav Yochanan ben Broka gives an objective amount. I'm not going to go through the math right now, and you'll thank me, or be upset with me because I'm not giving you the Gemara in detail. All you need to know is that according to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, a chatzi kav is equivalent to two meals. That's all you need to know. Now, again, I'm not giving you the details. I'm just giving you the basics. So from Rav Yochanan ben Broka, a half of a kav is equal to two meals. Rabbi Shimon Omer, shtei yados l'kikar, mishalosh kikaros l'kav. And according to Rabbi Shimon, so it is three loaves that come from one kav. So and each loaf provides three meals. So that means that a kav provides you nine meals. Okay? So, and if you want, a half a kav is going to equal 4.5 meals. Okay. So obviously that's a wide discrepancy between the two opinions. And then the Brisa ends off, the Mishnah ends off, Chatzi l'beis ha'menuga. When you walk into a house of tzaras, it's half of that. V'chatzi chatzi l'psol l'sikviyah. If you're a Kohen eating tamei food, it's half of that amount to become tamei. V'chatzi chatzi chatzi l'kabel tumas ochlin. And as far as the food becoming susceptible to tumah, it's half of that amount as well. Anyway, what does two kavim of wheat get you in terms of number of meals per week? Money, Rav Yochanan ben Broka, tamnei havyan. According to Rav Yochanan ben Broka, that those two kavim are going to get you eight meals. Good. And Rabbi Shimon, tamnei srei havyan. And if you're Rabbi Shimon, those two kavim are going to produce for you 18 meals. Eight meals or 18 meals. Now, back then, in the good old days, how many meals did you eat per day? The answer is two. Two meals per day. How many meals did you need every week? The answer would be called 14. 7 days a week, and apparently the rumor is that you got to eat every day. So the so that's 14 meals a week. So now our Mishnah says that the woman gets two kavim of wheat a week. Two kavim of wheat a week is either going to be eight meals or 18 meals. Those are the two opinions as per the Mishnah and Erevin. So neither of those equal 14. And all we're going to do now is just a little bit of accounting. How do you get either from 8 to 14, or how do you get from 18 to 14? But neither of those 14. So, Alolam Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Kadam Rav Chisat, Semehem Shlisha, Chanvani Achanami, Aisa Tilsa, Shadi Alayu. So the Gemara says, you got to factor in the following. Yeah, you know what? When we said eight meals come out of two kavim, that's not really true. It's really 12. And so how does 12 get to 8? Because we're talking from the perspective of the baker. Baker's got to make a living. And how much profit does he keep? And every time you go to the bakery now and you think to yourself, that's crazy. So just consider right now that the Gemara here is allowing the baker to keep a third of the profit to himself. Okay? So he gets to keep a third. So a third of 12 is 4. So in other words, so really 2 kavim get you 12, not 8. So the Gemara says, Akati tarte srei havyan. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's all, okay, good, we got up to 12. That's great. That's not 14. So the Gemara says, Acholan slimo leila Shabbos. The Gemara says, well, remember, what happens on Shabbos? They eat together. So they eat together on Shabbos. The Gemara says, Hanich laman damar achilas mamish, elaman damar achilas tashmish ma'ikal amemar. The Gemara says, yeah, but that's only one interpretation of the Mishnah. Another interpretation, which we're going to see tomorrow, is that Ochelos is a nice way to describe intimacy. But that doesn't mean they're eating together. And not only that, but on Shabbos you have three meals. It's called Shalashuddas. So you have three meals on Shabbos. So that doesn't get us to the place we want to be. Ela kedam Rav Chisid say me'am mechzal chenvani achanami asya palga v'shadi alayu. So the Gemara says, well, according to Rav Chisda, the chenvani keeps half. So the chmechzal chenvani. So in other words, you basically it's eight plus. It's 50% of the profit going to the chenvani. So kasha de Rav Chisda, de Rav Chisda lo kasha haba asu di avtzivi, haba asu de lo yavtzivi. So the Gemara says, look, some places the baker takes a third. Some
Hold on, Jack, just one second.
Some places they take half the profit. Some take the some places take a third of the profit. And the Gemara says, and that's predicated on whether or not the fuel is counted as part of the cost or not counted as part of the cost. So the Gemara says, Hachi shitzri havyan. So the Gemara says, okay, eight plus another eight, so that gets you to 16. So keman kerabi chitka damar arba sudas chayav adam lechol b'shabbos. So the Gemara says, okay, and just to finish up this accounting, so the Gemara says, yeah, you know what? She needs 16 meals a week. How come she needs 16 meals a week? Because there is an opinion that not only are you supposed to have shal shiris on Shabbos, you're supposed to have a fourth meal on Shabbos as well. So that is now 8 times 2. So that's 16. So that's one way to navigate through the discrepancy of our Mishnah that she gets 2 kavim a week. Now comes out that 2 kavim, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, is 16 meals. And that accords with how many meals she needs a week. Included in that is 4 meals for Shabbos. Okay, I'll stop here. Tomorrow we pick it up from the very